Wondery Plus subscribers can binge new seasons of American Scandal early and ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. From Wondery, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is American Scandal. In June of 1972, five men were caught breaking into Democratic headquarters in the Watergate complex. What appeared at first to be a small-scale burglary was later revealed to be an act of political espionage, one that was spearheaded by officials in President Richard Nixon's re-election campaign. President Nixon himself wasn't involved in the planning of the break-in, but as investigations of the burglary grew more intense, Nixon attempted to cover up the crime in order to protect himself and his allies. That cover-up would soon unravel. And facing withering scrutiny from Congress, the FBI, and the press, President Nixon resigned from office. Today, Watergate is seen as a seminal moment in American history. The scandal revealed how corruption could taint the highest office in the country, and it raised profound questions about the limits of presidential power. But according to today's guest, the scandal was a milestone in American history for another reason. Catherine Olmsted is a professor of history at the University of California, Davis, and has written that Watergate helped fuel the modern rise of conspiracy theories. In books including Real Enemies and Challenging the Secret Government, Olmsted reveals how Watergate damaged the public's trust in American government and how the scandal set the stage for decades of political unrest. In our conversation, we'll discuss the sensational investigations that came in the aftermath of Watergate and helped give rise to decades of conspiracy theories. We'll also look at the longer history of conspiracy theories in America, a history that goes back hundreds of years. Our conversation is next. American Scandal is sponsored by Audible. I get the thrill of, say, skydiving, but it's a lot of work and expense for something that lasts only minutes and comes with some safety concerns. Instead, I get my thrills in a lower dose, stretched out over hours with a good mystery. Like in the Penguin modern classic Perfume, The Story of a Murderer by Patrick Susskind. And as an Audible member, I can choose one title every month to keep forever from the entire catalog of classics, bestsellers, new releases, and Audible originals, ready to listen whenever, wherever on the Audible app. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/AS or text AS to 500-500. That's audible.com/AS or text AS to 500-500. American Scandal is sponsored by True Green. This is a true story. Right now, fertilizer is spilled all over my garage, and the fertilizer spreader has lost a wheel. While I'm usually pretty DIY, some things I leave to professionals. True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to a beautiful lawn. You water and mow, they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. So you do you and let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed. Catherine Olmsted, welcome to American Scandal.
Thanks for having me.
Watergate is the seminal American scandal. It is the gatiest of gates. But you've argued that Watergate was a turning point also in American life, and that the scandal changed the way Americans viewed political conspiracy theories. Could you explain what was so powerful about Watergate?
Well, by 1974, when Nixon resigned, the American people had learned that their president had been involved in a criminal conspiracy to subvert the democratic process by systematically spying on the campaigns of his opponents, and that these efforts had been paid for with illegal campaign cash. And then when these crimes came to light, the president himself had personally attempted to cover up his involvement by obstructing justice. And moreover, there was no question that this had happened because he had taped himself doing it. So once people learned these facts, they quite understandably wondered, what other crimes have government officials committed? What else has happened? What else do we not know?
And of course, the American public does discover much more, because the story didn't end with President Nixon's resignation. Congressional hearings continued into Watergate and beyond. What did they discover?
Well, because of public concern about possible government conspiracies related to Watergate, the Democratic leaders in the Senate decided to set up a committee to investigate other possible abuses and crimes committed by U.S. government agents, especially those in intelligence agencies. So it became known as the Church Committee after its chairman, Senator Frank Church of Idaho. And the Church Committee was tasked with uncovering additional secret government plots beyond those revealed in Watergate. And the committee spent 15 months investigating the darkest secrets of the early Cold War. It held sensational hearings in which it subpoenaed everyone from mafia dons to CIA chiefs. And it ended by publishing a shelf full of official reports on the FBI spying on civil rights leaders, including Martin Luther King Jr., on the CIA's illegal domestic spying program known as Operation Chaos, and early versions of NSA surveillance programs. And among other things, committee investigators uncovered a letter that showed that a top FBI official had tried to encourage Martin Luther King Jr. to kill himself by threatening to expose alleged extramarital affairs that their secret surveillance had uncovered. And then the most sensational revelations were that the CIA had arranged several, at least eight documented attempts on Cuban leader Fidel Castro's life, as well as orchestrated assassination plots against other foreign leaders. And some of these involved the CIA working with mafia leaders.
The Castro plots were probably some of the most sensational things to come out of this committee. What exactly happened?
Well, the CIA developed a toxin to put in Castro's cigars. They developed a deadly fungus, put the fungus in a skin diving suit, and then through a middleman offered the suit as a gift to Castro. They produced a ballpoint pen that had a hypodermic needle filled with deadly poison, and they recruited an agent to stab Castro with it. And they built an exploding seashell. So these plans were all in addition to simpler ones involving standard mafia hitmen. And to carry out these plots, the CIA recruited mobsters, members of the mafia, who had lost a lot of money in Cuba when Castro took over.
In an earlier series on American Scandal, The Feds versus the Activists, we described the FBI's attempts to discredit and even end Martin Luther King's life. And the letter that they wrote is not a subtle one. And then these attempts to kill Castro approach clownish. What do you think Senator Frank Church's purpose was, his intent with making public these sorts of secrets?
Well, Church was one of the most idealistic leaders in U.S. history. He was called Senator Cathedral and Frank Sunday School by his colleagues because he was so earnest. And he truly believed that if he exposed all of the U.S. government crimes and abuses of the past, that then the American people would have their trust restored in government, that they would so respect this Senate committee for revealing these crimes that then they would recommit to their trust in the U.S. federal government.
But that's not what happened, especially in regards to conspiracy theories about JFK's assassination.
Right. Well, the Church Committee's discovery that the CIA had worked with the mafia to try to kill Castro opened up a whole vast array of potential conspiracy theories involving the JFK assassination. Because once you know that Kennedy's CIA worked with the mafia to try to kill Castro, it's hard not to go down a rabbit hole and ask, did Castro try to kill Kennedy in retaliation? Were the Soviets involved? Did one of the mafia godfathers decide to kill JFK instead of Castro? Were anti-Castro Cubans somehow involved?
So it seems that by surfacing these dark and sometimes bizarre facts, We haven't really confirmed any existing conspiracy theories. Certainly no one imagined that there was the conspiracy of the exploding shell, but it gave fodder for a new public imagination about what else could be there.
Right, exactly. Because once people learned about these outlandish plots that had really happened, there was documentation, there was testimony that showed that people in the CIA actually designed these devices to kill Castro and engage these mafia hitmen to kill him, then, you know, their imaginations could run wild.
And this, of course, is coming at a very bad time in America. The period between 1968 and 1978 is probably one of the most tumultuous in its history. What was the shift in public opinion towards the government in general?
Well, there was a steady decline in trust from the mid-60s to the 1980s. So in the early mid-1960s, Americans tended to trust their government. About 4 in 5 Americans told pollsters in 1964 that they trusted their government to do the right thing all or most of the time. So almost 80% of Americans believed that in the early mid-60s. And then because of the Vietnam War, that trust started to fall. It's around 54% in 1970. And then, of course, Watergate causes an even steeper decline, and it's down to about 36% after Nixon's resignation. And Senator Church and his colleagues thought that that had to be rock bottom and that they were going to help restore trust. But in fact, trust continued to fall by a couple of points after their investigation and went down to about 33%.
You said earlier that Senator Church was an idealistic politician, but I wonder if he did make the political calculus, as you hinted at just now, that public distrust in government couldn't fall much further. So why not open the books?
Well, that's true. And also, I think that he believed that there was far more public support to learn these secrets than it turned out there was. He was running for president in 1976, and he hoped that his chairmanship of this investigating committee could help that bid. But he miscalculated. It turned out that most people just didn't want to know about these secrets and crimes.
I'm alarmed by the implications of this, that if there are government secrets, then it appears that the very best thing for the government to do is absolutely keep them secret.
That seems to be the case, that the more the government tells the American public about its mistakes and crimes, the more it tends to feed the conspiratorial imagination.
So in the mid-70s, we have this rising tide of conspiracy theory and distrust of the government. How did the leaders in Washington respond to this shift in opinion?
Well, they responded to the investigations for the most part by saying they'd rather not know what Church had uncovered, that they preferred being left in the dark. There was an investigating committee in the House at the same time as there was the Church Committee in the Senate. The House committee was more radical and came up with conclusions that there were systemic structural problems in the U.S. intelligence community. And in the end, the House of Representatives as a whole voted to suppress its own investigating committee's report. They kept it classified. And at the end of the day, the reforms that came out of the Church Committee were not very rigorous or long-lasting. So all of this investigation and revelation did not lead to a change in the way the U.S. government operated. It just led to more distrust among the American people.
There was one piece of new legislation, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. What was that?
That was the one significant law that came out of the Church investigation. It required warrants before the U.S. government, the FBI, or the NSA could listen in on Americans' phone conversations. The problem there was that the George W. Bush administration later just ignored that law.
So to be clear, warrants were required by agencies seeking intelligence on foreign agents, but involving American citizens.
Right, that's correct.
What other proposals were on the table that perhaps didn't make it?
Well, there were some proposals, of course, that probably had no chance of passing that said that the CIA should not be allowed to have covert actions at all anymore, that any covert action should be conducted by the military, which has a chain of command and better accountability. And those reformers wanted to turn the CIA into an intelligence gathering and analysis agency, period. But more realistically, there were reformers who wanted to rewrite the charters of the intelligence agencies and spell out exactly what they could do, what was legal and what wasn't legal. And that never got much support, even from the Democratic administration of Jimmy Carter. And so that never went anywhere.
Now, we're talking about a period in American history that perhaps is the nadir of popular support or belief or trust in the government. Of course, governmental scandals are nothing new. I became fascinated with how scandal-ridden Ulysses S. Grant's administration was. So it's been with us for a long, long time. How recent, though, are conspiracy theories in government?
Right. Well, conspiracy theories in general, of course, go back a long time. You see them in ancient Greece and ancient Rome. They're in the medieval era with the blood libel against the Jews. The English colonists who come over in the 17th century to North America, they have conspiracy theories. But most conspiracy theories up until the 20th century in the United States are focused on marginalized groups, on people who are outsiders and are believed by native-born Americans to have some sort of allegiance to foreign power. So there's conspiracy theories about Catholics and about Jews and about immigrants. But conspiracy theories about the government really start to take hold around World War I, because that's the time when the U.S. government starts expanding its surveillance powers, and the Justice Department and military intelligence start spying on Americans in World War I because they're empowered by the Espionage and Sedition Acts, which effectively criminalized dissent. And so once the U.S. government starts having these secret powers and this ability to spy on Americans, then a lot of Americans who are being spied on start, for very good reason, being paranoid about U.S. government conspiracies against them.
Well, there's good evidence for being paranoid. I mean, this period immediately after World War I is one of our earliest Red Scares, the Palmer Raids, a series of nationwide raids and deportations of suspected communists and anarchists by federal forces, a violent rounding up of the dissidents. It was something that many Americans thought impossible.
Right. There were a lot of violations of U.S. civil liberties during the Palmer Raids and during and immediately after World War I. And there was a lot of support for U.S. government suppression of dissent during World War I and immediately afterwards. But by the early 1920s, a lot of Americans have, once the immediate hysteria and fear of alien subversion has abated, they start to say, wait, we think we went too far. Maybe the government should not have these powers to spy on and imprison dissidents.
But there is a marked difference between these early Red Scares and what began to develop during the Cold War, specifically the era of McCarthyism, in which these conspiracies are ripe for political exploitation. And certainly McCarthy is probably the most emblematic politician of that exploitation. But how else had they been used for political gain?
From time to time in U.S. history, especially starting with World War I, U.S. government officials started using conspiracy-laden language in order to inspire the public to unite against an enemy. So the Germans are out to get us, or the communists are out to get us, or the terrorists later are out to get us, and so therefore we need to unite. So you can see official government conspiracy theories being spun by government leaders. McCarthy's really the master of using a conspiracy theory for political gain, and I think he points the way to the future for other demagogues. What he does is quite knowingly, intentionally inflate a conspiracy theory. He knows that there were a few communist spies in the government in World War II, and he uses this fact to then spin a conspiracy theory about hundreds of communist spies in the government currently. And he does that specifically with political goals in mind. He wants to weaponize conspiracy theories and use those conspiracy theories against the Democratic Truman administration. And ultimately, he gets so drunk with power, he continues to make these allegations when there's a Republican in the White House, which in part leads to his downfall when he continues to spin these conspiracy theories once his own party's in power. But McCarthy really benefits politically from the anti-communist conspiracy theory, and it shows how you can get away with lying to the public if your goal is to make people very afraid.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So let's progress a little bit through history, through time. You know, Nixon resigns in 1974, and only about 10 years later, America is embroiled in another crisis and conspiracy. Tell us what the differences and maybe similarities were with Iran-Contra.
Well, some people believe that Iran-Contra was even more disturbing than Watergate. The Iran-Contra affair exposed international racketeering, drug dealing, and subversion of the Constitution. On the orders of the CIA director, a staff member for the National Security Council secretly sold U.S. missiles to the government of Iran and then transferred the profits to a CIA-backed army in Central America, even though Congress had explicitly banned sending U.S. government funds to this army. And even though U.S. policy at the time was to denounce Iran as a government that promoted terrorism. So you have this hypocrisy as well as actual crimes. Moreover, there was a Senate investigation right after Iran-Contra that said that some of the officials within the CIA ignored evidence that their Central American allies were selling drugs in the United States to finance their war. And perhaps most important for conspiracy theories, there was testimony at the congressional investigation of Iran-Contra that revealed that the CIA director at the time, or that alleged that the CIA director, a man named William Casey, had wanted to create a CIA outside of the CIA in order to evade all democratic checks and balances. So for all of those reasons, I mean, there's the drug dealing, there's this version of the Constitution, there's the lying, there's the hypocrisy. And then there's this allegation that there was an attempt to create the CIA outside the CIA. You get an explosion of conspiracy theories after Iran-Contra.
Were these conspiracy theories just amplified by yet another scandal, or were they different somehow?
The conspiracy theories continue in the vein of the post-Watergate conspiracy theories that there are people within the government who don't have the public's best interest at heart. You have plotters within the executive branch. You have criminals. You have people who abuse their power. There is a big range of conspiracy theories after Iran-Contra. I mean, there's people on the left who believe that it shows that the CIA and the Reagan administration helped to bring drugs into Black neighborhoods with the goal of destroying the Black community. Those conspiracy theories are on the left. You also have conspiracy theories on the right, with militia groups believing that the investigations into the scandal prove that there's a deep state, a secret government that's working against the American people. And then, you know, most bizarrely, you have a lot of people with no ideological attachments at all who believe for various complicated reasons that Iran-Contra proved there was a conspiracy involving the U.S. government and aliens from outer space who allegedly crashed at Roswell, New Mexico in 1947.
I wish that we were in a moment in which it would be possible to just outright dismiss claims like that, but it's become clear that that they are sincere beliefs held by a large portion of Americans.
Yes. No, I think it's very true. I mean, I teach conspiracy theories here at UC Davis, and I have some very smart students who believe a lot of the more bizarre theories. And it's sincere on their part. It's not because they're weaponizing it for political benefit like political leaders do. It's because they sincerely believe them.
Well, each of these moments we've described, all the way back to Teapot Dome and then to Iran-Contra and 9/11 too, in the modern age, these are all each unique cultural moments, and they are rife with their own conspiracy theories. But is there any commonality? Is there a reason why at different times people have been more or less inclined to believe in a conspiracy theory?
Well, I would say a couple of things about that. One is that there, at times of obvious intelligence failures, there are always conspiracy theories. So Pearl Harbor is an intelligence failure. The JFK assassination is an intelligence failure. 9/11 is an intelligence failure. In all three of those cases, you had the U.S. government should have known or even did know that something was going to happen, but didn't put the pieces together. And so, that inspires some Americans to say, I bet they were part of the plot. Also, in times of crisis, in times of uncertainty, of course, people, not just Americans, but all human beings, turn to conspiracy theories in order to make meaning out of the chaos that they see around them. I think that there's a natural human tendency to want to see patterns, to want to see order, and to reject explanations, especially of tragic events that just say, oh, it was just a random coincidence. It was just some horrible thing that happened and there was nothing that we could have done. Instead, people want to see a plot, a plan, a reason. They want somebody to be in charge, even if it's evil people. And I think that those tendencies are more pronounced in times of crisis, of economic crisis or war, or massive intelligence failure, assassinations, political assassinations, all of those things bring out people's desire to look for order and meaning and purpose. And sometimes that means conspiracy.
I think we could probably all understand that in these violent moments, these breaks from the ordinary that are so shocking and upsetting to us, that we do look for meaning. But there seems to be a buffet of different options, and some people go for the most bizarre. What is the attraction on the very fringe?
Well, I think the people on the fringes, both the left and the right, already distrust the government, the media, all official explanations, because they are on the fringes, and so they think that they should be in the center. But they haven't been able to convince people to share their ideas, and why it's because there's a conspiracy against them. So they're just more inclined to see conspiracies and plots. Recently, of course, I think we've seen a lot more energy on the right in imagining conspiracies. And there's a lot of scholars who are interested in investigating why that's the case. But in general, political scientists have this formulation where they say conspiracy theories are for losers. And if your side has lost an election, you're more inclined to believe in conspiracy theories than the side that won.
You are one of these scholars who is attracted to studying conspiracy theories. What brings you to this topic?
I published my first book in 1996. It was called Challenging the Secret Government, and it was on the post-Watergate investigations of the CIA and FBI. So it focused particularly on the Church Committee, which exposed COINTELPRO and Operation Chaos and the Castro plots. I also discussed in the book the other congressional investigations that exposed MKUltra, the CIA's drug testing experiments. So I published this book in 1996. It was my dissertation with an academic press. So it's not a high-profile book by a long shot. Yet, I started getting lots of phone calls and letters in the mail from people all around the country who read my book, who, it turned out, sought out all scholarship on the Church Committee. And they told me they believed they were victims of these secret government programs that had been exposed by the congressional committees that I had written about. And sometimes they said that they had been victims of FBI or CIA illegal spying programs in the 60s, that they had been at anti-war rallies and they had been spied upon. And they would have very persuasive stories. Sometimes people would tell me that they were victims of MKUltra, the CIA's drug testing program, and their stories were usually not so persuasive, and they tended to talk a lot about CIA transmitters in their dental implants. And so I began to get fascinated by the difficulty of evaluating conspiracy theories about U.S. secret agencies, because secret agencies necessarily deal with secrets. It's hard for a historian or just an ordinary citizen to distinguish between some of the more outlandish theories and the fact that the CIA plotted to kill Fidel Castro with an exploding seashell. And so I got interested in the relationship between real government conspiracies and conspiracy theories about the government. And I wanted to explain how anti-government conspiracy theorists often build from real facts about real government conspiracies and then construct from those facts some very bizarre theories. And I wanted to analyze how these instances of proven government conspiracies help explain the hold of anti-government conspiracy theories on the public imagination.
And you actually have an anecdote about how difficult it is sometimes to discern fact from fiction. Someone called you.
Yes, this was the most bizarre story. A woman called me one day when I was in my office. So on my office phone, she called and said she was calling from a payphone in Sacramento, which is a big city near Davis where I live, and that she had read a story about me in an alternative newspaper in Sacramento, and she needed some advice because the FBI was chasing her and her boyfriend, because her boyfriend had worked for the CIA and they were accusing him of being a Russian spy. And she wanted some advice on how to handle the FBI. Should she approach them and tell them the truth? And I thought she was one of the CIA is putting implants in my teeth people. I thought she was one of the crazy people. So I just said, you know, talk to them there. You can trust them. I can't remember. I just got her off the phone. And then she sent me a letter with names and details, and I put it in a file that I put all of the crazy letters I received. And then a few years later, there was a news story about an alleged Russian spy who had been caught by the FBI. And the name rang a bell, and I went and looked in my file, and in fact, it was her boyfriend. And she had been telling me the truth as she knew it. And it got me thinking about how you don't know the difference, how hard it is to tell the difference between stories that seem completely crazy about secret government agencies and real conspiracies that they have committed.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
I think with the rise of social media, or difference of political discourse these days, we've probably all encountered many more crackpot ideas than we thought possible. And yet, people do sincerely believe them. And it is probably difficult sometimes to really differentiate fact from fiction, even in these extraordinary cases. But at the same time, we've also all probably been told that just confronting a conspiracy theorist with facts only entrenches their belief. So I guess this is two parts to the question. Knowing that you're well acquainted with the body of research, how do we differentiate fact from fiction inside a conspiracy theory? And how do we disentangle someone from false beliefs?
Well, there are certain rules that everyone can follow when they read something that alleges a conspiracy in the government. First of all, you check the author, who is writing this and why. Do they have legitimate credentials in this topic? And you check the tone and style. Is it balanced, sensationalist? And then check the source. Is it reliable? Is it quoted in other media outlets? Is the allegation backed by peer-reviewed scientific or historical studies? And you can also check, of course, the fact-checking websites. PolitiFact and Snopes are very good and have teams of reporters. If you put your theory into the search box, you can come up with all kinds of stories that they have done investigating these conspiracy theories. So that's the first part of your question. The other about how do you debunk conspiracy theories or convince someone that the conspiracy theory that they hold is not true, that is difficult. It depends on how wedded they are to the theory. If they truly believe it, really anything you do is unlikely to work. If they're only like curious, or if they still have some sort of open mind, what you do is you don't ridicule them. Don't overwhelm them with information. You don't yell at them, but instead you engage on the facts. You ask them to show you where they got this. You look at the source, and then you provide an alternative fact-based explanation.
You've mentioned that it's important not to discredit or shame a person who might hold a conspiratorial thought, but to may perhaps show empathy. And I think that's understandable because there are concrete, real examples of outlandish conspiracies that turned out to be true. So how do these true histories of conspiracy, how are they not evidence? How can the person you're talking with be dissuaded that they're not right, given the fact that conspiracies are true sometimes?
Well, just because there's evidence of real conspiracies in the past does not mean that every conspiracy theory about the government today is correct. You have to examine each theory on its merits, and you have to investigate it the same way that Woodward and Bernstein investigated Watergate. You have to look at the documentation. You have to look at the interviews of people. You have to look at reputable sources that have looked at these documents or interviewed these people and decide if the theory is based on fact. And so, for example, you might be intrigued that the CIA has in the past tried to kill foreign leaders. But does that mean that every foreign leader who dies now was killed by the CIA? No, obviously not. So you have to look at each instance individually and apply historians or journalists' tools to examine that source and decide whether it's true or not. So I understand that it's very compelling to say like, oh, well, there was the Gulf of Tonkin, so therefore there have been conspiracies in U.S. history. But that doesn't necessarily mean that George W. Bush planned 9/11. You know, you can't get from A to B. You have to do the work of looking at the evidence behind that particular conspiracy theory.
You said that you should rely on the media to help you fact check your conspiracy. That seems really problematic when you don't trust the media.
Right. I know. It's a very difficult problem to solve. And I think perhaps the only solution is long-term, that we need to have media literacy courses in high school and college so that students can learn how to verify and evaluate sources. Because, of course, what you're saying is correct. A lot of people go down the rabbit hole because they refuse to look at the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Atlantic or the New Yorker because they believe they're in on the conspiracy. And they don't understand that the mainstream media, they might make mistakes and they might have biases, but they are trying to play by the rules of objective journalism. And I don't know how to get that point across except by getting people early when they're in high school and college.
Let's think about the real world consequences of conspiracy theories, because certainly it's gone beyond telling your buddies what you think really happened and became a real political motivating force, as we've seen with QAnon. What is the risk if conspiracy theories continue to become mainstream?
Well, there are a lot of obvious problems with conspiracy theories. They're dangerous to individuals. They can be dangerous to groups. They can inspire violence. They can undermine public health and safety. But I would say even more generally, the growing inability of Americans to agree on a common set of facts is very troubling, because if we can't agree on the facts and if we can't agree on factual statements about collective problems, then we can't figure out ways to solve them. And not to be all doom and gloom here, but we could be talking about the end of democracy. You know, if a sizable portion of the public believes that the elections won by the other side are never legitimate, then we could get to a point where there are no more elections. So it's very worrisome.
Now, throughout your career, you've studied these conspiracies and the illicit, covert, and criminal actions of the government through Watergate, Iran-Contra, legions of other abuses. How do you personally maintain any trust in government yourself?
Who says that I do? No, I would say that the bulk of the federal government is filled with dedicated civil servants who just want to do their job. And I trust the people at the CDC and the Treasury and the Social Security Administration. I think they're trying to do the right thing and serve the public interest. And I differentiate between that vast part of government work with secret agencies who have, it is true, been proven to have lied in the past.
Well, that differentiation is still problematic because those are very powerful branches of the government.
Right. Well, it's a perpetual problem. How do you have secret agencies in a democracy? I think that I have to trust the overseers in Congress to have hearings and do investigations to keep secret agencies democratically accountable.
I guess finally, why don't we end our discussion with a meditation on the difference between, when thinking about government, skepticism and cynicism?
Right. Well, I think in a democracy, you need to be skeptical of official pronouncements. You need to hold your elected officials accountable, and you need to make sure there are checks and balances that ensure they're telling the truth. So skepticism is a strength in a democracy. I mean, Woodward and Bernstein were skeptical. They were conspiracy theorists, and it turned out they found a real conspiracy. Cynical citizens, however, just say, oh, I think they all lie and cheat. Yeah, Nixon got caught, but that's the only difference. All the other presidents have done the same thing, so why should I even bother to vote? Why should I pay attention to any sort of government activity or participate in any sort of collective action because they're all corrupt. I mean, that's very dangerous. That's very dangerous to democracy to have a large portion of citizens who are that cynical.
Catherine Olmsted, thank you so much for coming on American Scandal.
Thank you very much for having me.
That was my conversation with Catherine Olmsted, a professor of history at the University of California, Davis, and the author of books including Challenging the Secret Government, the post-Watergate investigations of the CIA and FBI, and Real Enemies, Conspiracy Theories and American Democracy, World War I to 9/11. From Wondery, this is episode 6 of Watergate from American Scandal. In our next series, we look at an environmental disaster and a community that took on one of the largest chemical companies in the world. In the mid-1990s, a mysterious plague struck a cattle farm in West Virginia. The farm's owner went looking for answers and teamed up with an unlikely partner from the world of corporate law. But as the two dug deeper, they uncovered a chilling secret about a company's toxic waste, a cover-up that threatened thousands of lives. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to American Scandal ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. American Scandal is hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham, for Airship. Audio editing by Molly Bach. Music by Lindsey Graham. Our senior producer is Gabe Riven. Executive producers are Stephanie Jens, Jenny Lauer Beckman, and Marsha Louie for Wondery.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.